Route 616, home for all things Marvel main continuity. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Bill and I are here again. No, Dan, that bald asshole.
Hey, leave bald assholes out of this.
I knew I was going to use that somehow coming into this episode.
Dan's in hiding because we're covering three Spider-Man.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so we're back. This is episode, who knows what? I lost track. It's episode 62. We are
I
back
lost
again.
track by like episode four. I'm not gonna lie. You say it, and I don't retain it, and then you just keep on going.
Normally I know anyway, and I like saying it just to, I just like keeping track of that stuff, but I'm just so tired right now, I forgot for a second. No. Bill and I are both tired, possibly a little cranky, but we're here to cover some comics and have some fun.
I'm less cranky due to powers of Clark Connors matches from New Japan.
Fair enough. I
That
honestly.
someone scheduled a podcast in the middle of. So maybe I am
No way.
cranky.
I wonder who would do that. Anyways,
Let me get my muffin.
I don't really have anything, honestly, for like pop culture stuff this week. So we might end up going straight to the comics unless you think of something. I mean, I guess the.
I'll probably think of something like three comics in, but I had nothing prepared.
I don't think the strike ended before we talked the last time on here. So
No, I
that mean
think
the
that was
right
after
the
because we missed last week.
yeah, the writer's strike ended. That's cool, but I mean the actor's one's still going, so that's
Yeah,
something.
without writers or without actors, writers don't really accomplish a lot. But at
The
least there might be
writers,
movies ready to go when the actors come back.
that's true. And to be fair, some of the stuff that's coming out with like new like creative teams, some of the stuff that it seems like they fought for writers should be a good thing for the quality of stuff going forward.
Yeah, and once they cave to the writers, it's going to be easier for the actors to win because it's very hard for the studios to make the argument that no, you don't get it when the writers got it.
Yeah, it's almost surprising it hasn't. They said it hit a snag like a day or two ago with them. It's almost surprising it's taking so
I'm
long
sure
off to
the
the writers.
snag is just the studios being pieces of shit
Oh, it
because
is. I had a.
their opinions on the writers were fucking horrible. They were
I
like,
just.
once they start losing their homes, we'll win.
I just remembered what the reason was that it hit a snag. It's because they said 2% was too much of a percentage for streaming revenue
Yeah,
for
that's
actors to get.
fucking ridiculous.
That was the reason that it hit a snag.
The actor should be getting like fucking 50% of the streaming revenue. Okay, a little less than that because there's writers and stuff, and the studio should get some, so they actually do it. But
Yeah.
the actor should get more than 2%. A lot more,
Probably
like at
like
least
15,
10,
20.
20. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be more fair. 15, 20% would probably in an ideal world, but
I was listening to a 2-hour podcast about Steven Seagal the other day. We don't live in an ideal world.
yeah, we definitely don't. No. I think that's the only pop culture thing I can think of at the moment. Well, I mean, we might think of something partway through, but yeah, that's a pretty big deal, pretty important in the world right now, for entertainment purposes. So, I guess on the topic of strikes, video game industry was also talking about going on one, but they haven't yet. But it's a possibility that they might be. They were
I would
approved to go on
love
it.
if they went on a strike to deal with Crunch.
Yeah.
Because fuck Crunch. I'd rather wait longer for games and let
Then
people
have
have a
a.
life than expect them to pull like 20-hour days for 3 months to rush a game out the door.
Yeah.
That's gonna have a fucking day one patch anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. That fucking. I forget what that. The cyber game that fucking infamously.
Cyberpunk.
Yeah, Cyberpunk that was infamously fucked up when it launched.
That thing took them weeks to fix. And that was CD Projekt Red. They're supposed to be one of the good ones.
Yeah, so that would
Emphasis on
be.
supposed to, because they pull a lot of the same shit as other studios, but they've been making things people like, so they've been getting away with it.
Yeah.
It's the Rockstar phenomena.
Yeah, Rockstar. the people making this, like the Spider-Man games and stuff right now, are getting away with. I mean, they're doing good work, but they could easily get away with stuff.
Oh, that reminds me. On the subject of video games and stuff we've talked about before, the new Assassin's Creed is absolute shit.
Yes.
Oh yeah, it's terrible.
I saw it come out, but I didn't even like hear anything about this one.
They fucked everything up.
That's funny.
Literally everything. The parkour is terrible. The combat is terrible. The stealth is borderline non-existent. The missions generally... Oh, it's worse. The missions generally consist of run across the city full of people that don't interact with you, watch a cutscene, run as far as you can across the city in the other direction, watch another cutscene, maybe fight six dudes.
Sounds pretty uninspired.
Oh, it's terrible. Rumor is it's supposed to be... It was originally supposed to be a DLC for, I think it's Odyssey, whatever, the last one. Or Valhalla. It was originally supposed to be in a DLC for that. And they just reskinned it to set it in Baghdad and changed the dialogue. And, like, gave a new character. And then padded it out like crazy to sell it as a full-sized game just because people were pissed at Valhalla.
Wow, that's crazy. That sounds like something that would happen in the video game industry right now. They need to go on strike.
Yes, I full-heartedly support a video game strike.
There was a certain amount of companies that were listed. It was like EA.
Of course.
It was EA. I'm forgetting all the companies now. But it was some of the big ones, like a lot of the big ones and whatever, so. Yeah.
I'm sure Ubisoft was in there.
I think they were. I'm just forgetting all the names right now.
Because Ubisoft is horrible and written by notoriously run by a sex bad. Pest.
Yeah. Blizzard was in there.
Of course, Blizzard's another piece of shit that got
also
away for years
pest.
Off of positive press from Diablo 2.
Yeah.
And the original.
And World of Warcraft.
Overlap. Even that had a lot of shitty stuff by the time things started falling off. People used to love it, but by Diablo 3, people were already getting pissed at the crap they were pulling with World of Warcraft.
Fair.
I've never played it because I don't have the time
it was,
to like, go hard into World of Warcraft and getting yelled
either.
At by a 12-year-old because I'm not max level like 2 days after a DLC comes out doesn't seem like a good time to me.
It was the big craze when I was growing up, though, was everybody playing that.
I definitely saw the craze. I just also know how much people yelled at you, and I didn't really want to do that.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, unless we think of something else, let's head into some comic talk. Today we're covering, like Bill teased, 3 Amazing Spider-Mans along the way. We also have a couple Daredevils and a Surge in Fury to end us off today. So
most of it is good.
Yeah, most being the important
or Daredevil
term for sure. Yes, it's good comics and Daredevil. so
I cannot believe that comic survived until Frank Miller. I'm in 1978. Daredevil is still terrible.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily looking forward to reading that. I've gotten to, like, I've been just putting stuff in my spreadsheet and I keep going forward just because I find it fun to do. And I'm in, like, 73 now? 72 to 73 now?
Oh, you're starting to butt up against the big wall of crap that comes out.
And I've been seeing some interesting things going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There's some good stuff there, but there is some shit, too.
A lot of it looks good, or at least it looks like it starts good. And then there's some, like, Daredevil for a lot of the Daredevil I've been seeing, like, what the fuck are they doing in this title?
The good thing about Daredevil is it never seems to have long story arcs.
The
so
good
you
thing
get, like, two or three terrible Daredevils, and then you're on to something else.
The good thing about Daredevil is that Natasha comes around to be abused.
And yeah, that's not good.
No, it's
not. Natasha makes it worse.
Probably, because he's more of an
asshole. This is in no means her fault.
No.
Because I love Natasha. The problem is the writers of Daredevil do not.
Yeah, she gets taken off her own half title with the Amazing Adventures title and then gets thrown into an abusive relationship.
I will say her inclusion in Daredevil is a step up. Because her own half title is even worse. Because the first fucking good female lone hero that Marvel writes is fucking Carol Danvers in 78.
I thought you were going to say a Spider-Woman.
Spider-Woman hasn't been good yet. Because they're still doing the weird, like, alien spider thing.
I don't know a lot about early Spider-Woman, so...
Oh, it is awful. Like, their original idea for her, I think she was like a... I don't even remember how it worked. It's been a while since I read it. But I think she was like a spider. They turned into a human or something. It's literally the spider pig. Yeah, I think it's gone by the time she gets her solo title. But it's literally like the spider pig joke. Or spider ham joke.
That's awful. I'm pretty sure they must drop that when she gets her solo title. Because I think right away it's like the blood to see shit and whatever. Yeah, or whatever.
She doesn't have the name Jessica Drew even yet.
Okay. It's literally, when she becomes Jessica Drew then, I imagine.
Yeah, literally all I've read of Spider-Woman is the one shot they did of her. That was real bad.
The first time they tried to launch it. Because they tried...
They did a one shot, and then like 3 months later they started an actual ongoing series, and I think they threw away pretty much everything they did in the one shot for that ongoing series.
Yeah,
but
I think they realized
I'm currently sitting in that gap between the two right now. But they've put out a couple of Ms. Marvel that are honestly fantastic.
Well, that's good.
Dan would hate them because she gets the best of his boy. Because she completely outmaneuvers Jonah in like the first issue, and that's when I fell in love with her. And I'm sure that love will last right up until 2004, where she becomes a horrible person and it never changes.
No, it'll probably go away before that, possibly.
Oh yeah, I heard she was pretty good until Civil War. I've never read any real Carol Danvers comics. She was never a character I liked, but...
Yeah, and she's gotten a bit of a redemption arc in recent years,
yeah,
too. But
she peaked early, though.
Yeah, sounds like. Well, let's go into this Amazing Spider-Man, the first three. This one is issue number 25, titled Captured by J. Jonah Jameson. So you know this should be fun. Stanley and Steve Ditko doing all this, of course. Sam Rosen's on letters. March 1965, release date, a 20-page story, and Bill will take us away with this one.
I want to mention before we start, this cover proves the internet was not a thing yet. Spider-Man is wrapped in tentacles and squirting white liquid into Jonah's face. And if you look up that cover, none of it is a lie.
Bill taking liberties early on, I see.
I'm not even really taking liberties. Like, the internet would destroy that cover today.
It would.
It makes sense in the context of the story, but holy shit, is it questionable. Anyway, to tell the actual story, so that it might make some contextual sense to you.
We don't need to bother.
Yeah, let's just move on. This is a standalone. We can just leave it sounding extremely questionable instead of showing how questionable it is in different senses.
Sus-spotty moments.
Yeah. As Peter goes to sell pictures of a crime to J. Jonah Jameson, an inventor named Smythe comes in with a robot guaranteeing the destruction of Spider-Man. Since Peter needs money badly, he eggs Jameson on to hear out the wacky inventor. Smythe shows how his robot instantly shoots out steel tentacles at the hint of a spider's presence and grabs a hold of Peter, much to his surprise. Okay, they missed a point there that makes this a little less obvious that Peter's actually Spider-Man. They gave Peter a spider to hold, and the robot was supposed to grab the spider. But it grabs Peter again because he's more of a spider, but that detail actually is important to the story. Jameson is given a remote control, and they agree to a deal. Betty is furious with Peter for trying to trap Spider-Man, not understanding his true reasons. Peter shows up to school and has Flash Thompson waiting to fight him as he hangs around Liz Allen too much to his liking. As Peter exits school, he sees the robot and begins to run. Flash, thinking he's running away from a fight, runs after Peter. Peter turns and fights the robot and tries to put webbing on the robot, but it slides off and avoids its... This sentence makes no sense, so I'm going to just try to tell it on my own. So Flash sets up a fight with Peter outside of the school. And when Peter's not going to the fight, and instead leaving by a different exit, he sees the robot and starts to run. Flash starts chasing him. Eventually he evades them long enough to change into Spider-Man. And starts trying to fight the robot. He can't web it because it's too slippery. And it keeps trying to grab him with the tentacles. And I want to mention, this robot literally is projecting Jameson's face on the front of it. That's where the white liquid squirting into Jameson's face was from. Meanwhile, Liz is concerned for Pete's safety due to Flash Thompson, and Betty is concerned since the robot is attacking Spider-Man, so they both head to his house. Both are in for a shock as Mary Jane Watson is waiting for Peter to come home. Although we can't see her face, Betty thinks she looks as beautiful as a movie star. While fighting the robot, Spider-Man is caught by the steel tentacles and can't escape. Both Smythe and Jameson rush off to locate the robot and unmask Spider-Man, but Spider-Man undoes the power box, so when Jameson goes to unmask him, he comes up empty-handed. Peter goes home, happy that he has lived another day, but is in trouble when Aunt May has discovered his extra Spider-Man outfit and demands an explanation. She accepts it now, but now Peter Parker has no Spider-Man costume. So yes, Peter did off-panel strip completely naked in this comic in public to get out of his Spider-Man suit and put his regular clothes that were blocks away back on. Just to continue to sus Spider-Man moments.
Well, when there's tentacles around, you gotta strip down.
Yes.
That was a really fun comic, I thought.
I really liked it, although rereading it, I noticed that, holy shit, Ditko must have been up against the deadline for this one.
Yeah.
Because the art is not good.
Yeah, it's a step down for Ditko. I think,
It's back next issue, so I think he must have been feeling a time crunch. He probably didn't really have a good idea on how to go with Jameson has a robot to kill Spider-Man for a while.
Yeah.
Because I know with the Marvel method, the way they go is Stan comes up with the idea and gives it to the artist, and the artist draws it, and Stan writes a story around what they drew.
Yeah. That's probably why the Molten Man comic is so fucked.
Yeah, because they weren't talking anymore. And so Ditko gets this note from Stan about this idea. God only knows what that said. Goes off and draws something, and then Stan has to try to figure out what he was thinking.
Yeah. I mean, it was a Spider-Man really good. I gave it 4 stars.
I gave it 4 too. They had the robot parts were the weakest part.
Well, the Finn with Spider-Man, there's a couple Finns I want to point out with why Spider-Man is top tier of all the titles we're covering at the time. One Finn is, there's a lot more logic put into these stories a lot of the time. Like, even with this one, like, Peter holding the spider and that stuff, and then, like...
Yeah, that's why I called back to, or mentioned it, because... It made way more sense than the way it was presented in that summary.
Aunt May finding this costume and blah blah blah. It's just little things a lot of the time. Make it a much fun, more fun read.
They focus a lot more on what he's doing as Peter Parker too, like the whole stuff with both Betty and Liz going to his house, arriving at the same time, and MJ's already there. And so they both storm off furious with him is just hilarious, and he has no clue that any of this has happened.
Yeah.
That, it will come back in the future, too.
Yeah. That goes into my other point of why Spidey is so much better than the other comics a lot of the time. It's because Spider-Man has a side cast, and the side cast is actually really fun to read. I mean, Tony has a couple side characters that are great with Happy and Pepper, but like
they don't get to do anything.
Not at this point, no. These people are... They're having
They actually have fully developed characters that change and matter. Like, Liz went from hating Peter to really liking him.
Liz Allen is incredible in this early era.
Yeah,
she becomes a nothing character in the future.
Yeah, but right now she's putting Flash in his place all the time and stuff.
It's been great.
Yeah. And even Flash has already had a character arc.
Oh, yeah. No,
and
I mean,
he has a lot more of a change in the future. Like, I mean, spoilers, but I don't think anyone's going to be too upset about this one. In the future, Flash and Peter end up as roommates for a while.
Yeah, their rivals to friendship arc is pretty great for the years.
Yeah, and the side stuff they're doing interesting side stuff with Flash right now, where I am in Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man. I don't know where it's going yet, so I can't really talk too much about it, because I legit don't know where it's going, but it's really interesting.
Yeah, well, good Spider-Man comic, and that's going to probably keep up when we cover the other ones. So.
Oh, yeah. Spoilers, I like the other ones more than this one.
Yeah. Before we get there, though, we have a little something in the way.
a very so tall something.
Yeah, let's start talking about Daredevil number 8. This one is titled, The Silt Man Cometh. That's right, everybody's boy, Silt Man, first appearance here.
And I think it was the last issue that had the white liquid.
Strap in, stand tall, and get ready to join us on this journey into Daredevil number 8.
Soaring to still greater heights of glory. They knew what they were doing when they put that on the cover of Stilt Man.
Yep. Stanley writing this bad boy, of course. We got art and inks by and the cover art by Wallace Wood. Wally Wood, sometimes our boy, sometimes our worst enemy.
He's my boy in this one. I fucking loved his art. It's very stylized, like it's 1950s pulp art. It looks like Dick Tracy. But that actually works really well for Daredevil.
He's either really good or really meh.
It depends on who's inking him. Like, here he inked himself. Next Daredevil issue, he's inked by one of our nemesis.
No.
In the form of... I'm blanking on his name, so I just... Bob Powell.
Oh. Ouch.
Yeah, that's why there's a noticeable difference between these two issues.
I guess we should let Wally cook, then.
Yeah, Wally on his own is good.
April 1965 release date from this one. 20-page story. And I will have the pleasure of taking us through this one.
You did it to yourself. You picked the order on these.
I did indeed. It's a pretty long synopsis, but we'll get right to it.
I mean, a lot of stuff happens in this issue. Just none of it is good.
It does, to be fair. Yeah, a lot of it is not. Mainly who Stilt Man is.
yeah, that was terrible.
Daredevil saves a woman from a out-of-control car. However, when he hops aboard the speeding vehicle to stop it, his radar sense warns him that there is a bomb on board the vehicle. As this is happening, a helicopter carrying a payroll is robbed by a new criminal called Stilt Man. While this is happening, Daredevil manages to drive the car with the explosives into the pier before it can harm anybody else. He soon spots the Stilt Man, but is unable to stop him before he can get away. Later, back in his civilian guise of Matt Murdock, Daredevil is told about Dr. Van Eyck, a doctor from Boston who might be able to restore Matt's lost eyesight by lost eyesight by his secretary Karen.
I'm sure that'll never come up again.
No, they never try to fix Matt because he needs to be fixed and all. However, before Matt can respond to Karen about if he will seek the treatment, they are interrupted by the entrance of Foggy with Matt's next client, Wilbur Day, a former employee of Caxton Laboratories, where he invented hydraulic lifts which his boss Carl Caxton had stolen the patents. Murdoch then calls Caxton to tell him that his former employee intends to sue him, a threat which Caxton encourages them to follow through on. Later in his Daredevil guise, Daredevil unsuccessfully battles Stiltman, who manages to get away once again. Later, when meeting with Wilbur again, Caxton arrives at the office to contest the lawsuit. While the two argue over who owns the rights to the hydraulic device, Matt notices that one of them is lying due to an irregular heartbeat, but can't figure out which one is the liar because they are too close together. Following Caxton as Daredevil, he's quickly shaken off by Caxton, who realizes he's being followed. Daredevil cannot resume his tailing because of reports that Stiltman is causing havoc again. He again fails to stop Stiltman. Returning to Wilbur Day, the two go to confront Caxton directly. There they find the story really sucks, and there they find...
Like it hasn't been sucking so far?
No, but, I mean, I really hated this twist. There they find the hydraulic lifts, which turn out to be Stiltman's stilts. Attacked by Caxton with a gun, Wilbur Day manages to knock Caxton out and then reveals to Murdoch that he's really Stiltman and that he came to steal his shrinking device from Caxton before knocking Murdoch out. Taking the device and making a run for it in his stilts, Wilbur Day is followed by Daredevil, and in the battle, the shrinking ray is turned on Wilbur Day, who shrinks so small that he disappears from sight. So he gets Doctor Doom type treatment.
I was just gonna say, yeah, he was a shittier Doctor Doom, which is kind of a trend for Daredevil right now because the next issue is also shitty Doctor Doom.
That's a good point. Last paragraph here. Returning to the Nelson and Murdoch law office, Matt is confronted by Caxton, but Murdoch tells him that Wilbur Day has dropped the lawsuit and they decide to let the whole thing go. After, when Karen presses the subject of Matt seeing Dr. Van Eyck to restore his lost vision, Matt tells her that it's too much of a risk, causing her to storm out of the room, calling Matt a coward. Yeah.
Yeah, because in 1960s comics logic, no, actually, I'm fine with my disability, I've learned to live with it, and I don't want to take further risks. I'm completely content with the way things are, is seen as cowardice.
Yeah, this whole stuff hasn't aged well.
I don't think it was that good for the time.
No,
I haven't seen a lot of 60s media about blindness, but it seems like it would be offensive back then.
You'd think, but I don't know. Something didn't click with Stan, that's for sure.
Yes, but you see, I've read a lot of stuff that Stan's written about women, so that might just be Stan.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like he was probably quite the asshole back in the day.
I'm pretty sure the romance comics are just him working through his issues with women.
Probably. Maybe he had some, maybe he was a bit ableist.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, if the term existed back then, he would have been an incel. You haven't read the romance comics yet, so...
Not yet.
That seems harsh to you, but yeah, he totally has an incel's view of women. Because every single fucking woman in the romance comics is a horrible person. The men are fairly bad, too, but the women are truly horrible. That's getting off topic for our shitty, shitty Daredevil, which is also truly horrible. 2 stars, just because I like the art.
Yeah, I forgot to not skip ahead before I said my rating. Yeah, it was 2 stars. I was going to say I'm pretty sure I said 2 as well, but... Yeah, I mean, it wasn't good. I didn't hate it, though, so 2 is perfect for that one.
Yeah, it was a low two, though.
I hated parts of it, to be fair.
I hated the twist. I hated how he beat Stiltman.
Yeah.
I hated that it took him three times to beat fucking Stiltman.
The first half was kind of alright, and then it really takes a fucking jump down in quality, even worse quality.
Yeah, Stiltman should have been Claxton. It would have been way better comic if he was Claxton.
They frame it to make you think it will be.
Because it makes no sense that it makes no sense what the guy who it actually is. Like, it's Claxton, and then they just change it because, like, they're Vince McMahon, who's heard that the internet has figured out the finish to his pay-per-view.
Yeah, exactly. It literally goes against everything good I was just saying with Spider-Man. With Spider-Man is more logical. This shit isn't logical at all. Sometimes going with the obvious is not bad.
Especially when it's revealed in the issue. If it was revealed in Claxton, in this issue, that it was Claxton, it would have been fine because you would have felt smart figuring out that it was Claxton.
Yeah, because it should be all logic. It dictates that it should be.
It's written to be Claxton, and then it's just changed because Stan wants to get you at a twist.
He fucking pulls with Vince Russo.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Wally misunderstood who the villain was supposed to be. I'm pretty sure the villain was supposed to be Claxton.
And Stan Wally had to call him the fly.
And Wally drew it as the other guy, and Stan had already written the dialogue for like the first 10 pages before he got the second half and had to change it, because literally it's written to be Claxton.
Yeah, I know.
And Claxton has the good villain name.
That's why I was pissed off when the shit happened.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure Wally got the second half in late. And that's probably why Bob Powell's inking on the next issue.
Yeah.
Because probably. Wally was too slow doing everything.
It's probably exactly what happened, really. Well, I guess we'll move on back to a good comic in Amazing Spider-Man. But shout out, though, before we move forward, I'm wearing my favorite, the shirt of my favorite jobbers, so...
Oh, yeah. Did you hear apparently Cash isn't hurt?
I did. I didn't tell you just to surprise you. They wanted to do that on purpose, apparently.
They shouldn't have put him over as hurt.
Somebody joked all this just to not to put the Bucks over again.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with them putting those two over strong.
Yeah.
But they didn't put them over strong. Because modern wrestling fans are smart. They know that was booked as an emergency title switch because of the team being injured. So it actually makes them look weak, even though they slammed the shit out of Dax.
Yeah.
It would have made them look strong if they came in something approximating 100% and then got the shit kicked out of them that way.
Yeah, it was a weird call, but
I think they actually are hurt and just don't want to say anything.
Yeah,
I think they're trying
to
kayfabe it, but like that whole thing was booked like these guys are hurt and we're protecting them.
It's the whole Finn's kind of weird. So it doesn't really make
any
sense.
AEW's had some sus booking the last few weeks.
Yeah. The whole thing's pretty weird. Anyways, we'll go back to the comics we're covering. And cover Amazing Spider-Man number 26, which is titled The Man in the Crime Master's Mask. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, of course, still together, not broken up yet. Sam Rosenzahn,
that is.
This
little two-part arc is the last time they actually spoke.
Seems like. April 1965 release date. This is part of a story arc, by the way. This is the Green Goblin first to Crime Master. This is part one of two, because like Bill said, it's a two-parter. And this is a 20-page story. This is for Bill to say.
Yes.
I almost forgot to say that.
Peter's looking for a Spider-Man outfit to wear, and despite trying home, as well as the Daily Bugle, he's come up empty. So that's a little vague, elaborate. He tries at home to find where Aunt May hid the costume that she took from him because he didn't find it in the trash, and he tries to Daily Bugle because Jameson's got the costume that he rigged up in the robot.
Again, small moments in continuity that make for a fun read.
Yeah, like, really, this is a three-part story. It was fine to stick the Daredevil in because, like, a day or so has passed, so it gives us the feeling of time passing. But it's pretty continuous from the last issue to this one, too.
Mm. Definitely.
As Peter goes to bed, we see a meeting on the docks between the Green Goblin and a man known as the Crime Master, who apparently knows the Goblin's secret identity, yet the Goblin knows Crime Master's identity, too. The masked Crime Master then pays visits to all the big criminal organizations in town, stating that he's taking control immediately. As we see the Crime Master go home, we see Frederick Foswell hide a set of clothes in a panel behind his clock. Meanwhile, Peter goes to school and has heard enough from Flash and attacks him, but is seen by the principal, Mr. Davis, and gets in trouble. Flash does the honorable thing and lets Mr. Davis know what really happened, because they left this out, but Peter was going to get expelled because the principal thought he just randomly attacked a bunch of guys.
You only get one chance here, bucko.
I mean, to be fair with what the principal saw, Peter should have gotten expelled.
It's, again, written very logically.
Yeah, this comic makes a lot of sense. After getting a Spider-Man outfit from a costume shop, he goes to track down Frederick Foswell, but as he goes into his apartment, a gunshot goes off and almost hits him. As Spider-Man follows the figure, he discovers it's the Crime Master, and before he lays a fist on him, he's given a gas that suffocates him. As he falls off the side of a building, he is presumed dead. Meanwhile, the mob groups have decided to meet and hear the Crime Master's deal down by a pier, and a character known as Patch tells the cops what's happening. Yet, as Spider-Man does surveillance on the meeting, the Green Goblin swoops down and begins to attack him. A pumpkin bomb stuns Spider-Man, and the Goblin goes to unmask him, but can't, but since Spider-Man had to use sticky webbing to keep the cheap store-bought costume together. I love that detail. As the Crime Master makes his presentation, the Green Goblin presents the limp body of Spider-Man to the crowd of criminals, and that's how the comic ends.
Good stuff.
Real good stuff.
I mean, I didn't enjoy it as much as you. I gave this a 3. I'd probably say it's like a 3.5, the higher 3, but it didn't quite get the 4 for me.
It did get a 4 from me.
I don't know why, looking back. It might be partly that I found the costume fin a little silly, even if it is good continuity and stuff. But
see, I really enjoyed the costume stuff. I'm glad it only lasted for this arc. But the fact
yes.
that the costume kept falling down and Peter had to, like, web it together to hold it onto him, and then it saves his identity, all worked really well for me.
Yeah. I feel like, looking back, that's probably a little thing that might have been like...
I can see hating it, too. Because it does kind of make Spider-Man look like a joke. Because, like...
I think...
There's scenes of him, like, climbing up the costume. Or climbing up the walls, and the little costume booties are falling down, and he's got, like, a big old gap in his back, and his butt crack's hanging out. They didn't draw that part, but you know that's happening.
Yeah, so that's where I landed on that one. I don't know if there was anything else that really tipped me. I think I remember not really being into the whole Crime Master stuff this time as much as the next issue.
Yeah.
But...
There's a moment that I think is in this comic that was omitted by the synopsis because it's not super narratively important, but I absolutely loved it. When Peter goes by the Daily Bugle looking for his costume, and he runs into Betty, and Betty's fucking furious at him for Mary Jane, and he's never even met Mary Jane yet at this point.
That
he's
was
just
incredible.
Like, I don't know who she is. She's some girl my aunt's trying to hook me up with. What do you want me to do? And Betty does not believe him at all, because of course not. You've got this smoking hot woman in your house. Of course you know she's there.
Yeah. No, that was really good. It's I liked all the side stuff more than the main stuff in that one is what was going on there, I think. It was why it didn't quite get the 4 for me. But yeah.
Yeah, I didn't care too much about the Crime Master himself. I think it helped too. And this might like you have a memory for the really fine details about comics, so you probably had a disadvantage going into this. I had never heard of Foswell before reading The Order. So as far as I knew, he could be the Crime Master. Spoilers, he's not, but it's spoilers for the issue we're talking about next, so I'm fine saying it now. But yeah, so I think that made it work better for me because I really wasn't sure if Foswell was the Crime Master or not.
And I knew he wasn't, so you're probably right. That's probably part of why I wasn't into it as much.
Yeah, because for me, like, just a random guy, the Crime Master, isn't that interesting. But if it's Foswell, that's really interesting, and the potential of it being him carried it for me much more than the Crime Master on his own.
That is probably a big thing, because I remember being kind of like, come on, Peter, like, with him being so insistent that it has to be Foswell type thing.
I didn't think it was Foswell, because they had done his redemption arc, partially, but I didn't know, and that made it a lot better.
Yeah. Well, let's find out with the audience how that goes as we go into Amazing Spider-Man number 27. And this one is titled Bring Back My Goblin to Me. I didn't realize
that
was the title.
I hate
that
fucking title.
It's so stupid. It's supposed to be like that fucking old song.
Yeah, Stan's doing a topical reference that does not age well.
Yeah, it's like Bring Back My Darling to Me or something like that.
I think it's Baby, but I'm not sure.
It might be Baby, I don't know. It's something, it's dumb.
It's something like that. Either way, here we are, two aces talking about a romance song. Of course we think it's dumb.
Oh, shit. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, of course, still together for now. Artie Simic on letters, May 1965 release date. Story arc, conclusion here with the Green Goblin versus Crime Master Part 2 or 2. 20-page story, and I will take us through this one, which thankfully is only a few paragraphs.
I mean, these ones haven't been that long in the summaries. There's a lot of stuff that happens in them that's good, but doesn't ultimately matter towards the greater story of Spider-Man that much. It's just good side stuff.
I'm just feeling that Daredevil right now.
Laugh, but I'm stuck with it next.
Yeah. The Green Goblin brings Spider-Man's limp body on stage, much to the surprise of the Crime Master. A henchman ties Spider-Man in chains, Kinky, but as the two criminal masterminds chat with to each other, the sleeping gas wears off and Spider-Man tries to wiggle free. As the gathered mobsters attack Spider-Man, the cops flood in and Spider-Man breaks free from the chains and assists the policemen who have now been cornered. Spider-Man realizes he can't catch up to the Goblin's glider and instead chases after the Crime Master. As he weaves underneath piers, he's finally lost him in the thick green cloud of nerve gas. Spider-Man suspects that Frederick Foswell is one of the criminals and he confronts J. Jonah Jameson on it. Foswell is invited into their office for a discussion. Across the way on a rooftop, the Crime Master plots his revenge, but in a struggle is shot by police. He laughs and begins to tell the Goblin's identity, but falls dead before he can, which is a pretty fun moment. It's very, like, obvious when you've read a lot of stuff or watched a lot of stuff that that's how it's gonna go, but it's pretty fun. And for the time, it's not an old, tired trope.
It kind of is. They've been doing since the Golden Age where someone finds out who the hero is and then dies at the end of the story before they can reveal it.
I just lied to you guys. It is an old, tired trope. But I still enjoyed it here.
Oh, and yeah, it's good here.
In the order we're covering, it's a new thing.
Yeah, it's good here. I liked it. It's just, it's not a new idea. I didn't read all those Captain America stories to not bring that up.
Fair enough. Fair enough, Bill. The police rush to Jameson's office and personally thank Foswell for his assistance, and Foswell reveals the crime master to be Nick Lucky Lewis. Since Peter is tight on money, he decides to sell his pictures to a different publisher. Well, nowadays you could just start an OnlyFans.
Dan would buy it.
Yeah, there we go.
I just wish he was here to hear me say that.
Yeah, me too. That would have been great. Barney Bushkin is this different publisher, but he decides not to in the future because Barney Bushkin asks too many damn questions.
Finally, I think Bushkin actually becomes a key player in the 90s.
That's crazy.
I think he's the guy that buys... I'm not 100% on this, but I think he's the guy that buys the Bugle and puts Jonah out of business for a while.
Wow. Finally, we see Peter Parker sewing a new Spider-Man outfit together while an unmasked Green Goblin, whose face cannot be seen, swears revenge on Spider-Man.
Okay, right off, I want to call out one of my favorite things this comic did. The fact that the Crime Master was some nobody. And when he's revealed, everyone's just like, I don't know who this guy is, do you?
Yeah, I do. I like that a lot. That's one of the that actually made this better whole experience better for me, because I honestly didn't know who he was myself. I just knew it wasn't Foswell.
Yeah, and the fact that for once it's not someone tied into the story, it felt more realistic that it's just some random dude.
Yeah. It's kind of like how they were going to make Hobgoblin Ned Leeds at the beginning, and then they were like, that's not a good idea at first, before they end up doing it in the future or whatever. And then it's made some random guy. He might have been tied in a little bit or something, but it seemed like a more random guy when they actually revealed it or whatever.
That's because it was supposed to be a random guy, and then the publisher got involved and was like, it has to be someone important.
I rehearsed it, didn't I? It does end up being Ned Leeds, but it was supposed to be a random type.
Yeah, thing. It ends up being Ned, but it was supposed to be just some guy.
And then like, people hated Ned it was, and they switched it from being Ned.
Yeah, Ned was supposed to just be a dick,
yeah.
But not actually a villain.
And so it's the opposite of what I was just saying.
Yeah, it was producer or publisher interference.
Yeah, because people ended up hating that it was Ned, and Ned's killed off, blah, 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 but then it ends up being... It was actually not Ned, and he was being manipulated.
Yeah. Man. Their classic fix a mistake, much like the saga of Iron Man's nose.
Don't worry, Bill. The Crime Master's legacy will carry on. Don't worry.
Oh, does he come back?
Well, kinda. I just looked
at
the
notes. Actually, no, I remember the next instance of the Crime Master. I know who that is. I've read that one.
It's probably what I was...
Kingpin related?
No, it's related to the guy from this issue.
Oh, okay, then I don't know what you're thinking of.
I just read it in the notes of that.
Okay, because... they do a thing where Kingpin, the Crime Master starts moving in on the Kingpin in the 70s. And
interesting.
I won't say who it is if you don't know, because the reveal is actually pretty good.
Well, I guess the one that they're noting must be in the further in the
future.
Yeah,
that Crime Master is completely unrelated to this one, other than the costume and the name.
Alrighty. Well, let's move on to the
Oh, we haven't
other
given
Daredevil.
Our ratings on this one.
Oh, we
four
didn't?
Stars.
I gave this one a 4 as well.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that one. I thought that was way better than the first part.
I liked the first part a little more, but like I said, I think it comes down to us the difference in our expectations about Foswell.
Fair. That was probably a big reason for it.
Yeah, because this one, like... The reason the synopsis is so short is it's literally like 10 pages of Spider-Man fighting gangsters.
I also really love the action of Steve
Ditko's
action.
Oh, the action was good. the action's real good, but I'm never going to rate a whole action issue as high as, like, a good narrative issue.
Fair.
Action tends to cap at 3 for me.
So, going into the other Daredevil issue, titled That He May See. Also, by the way, if you think this is going to be shitty just by looking at the cover, you'd be right.
It's shitty, but I bet you'll be wrong on how it's shitty.
Yeah.
Even though that cover is actually fairly accurate to what happens in it, you'll still probably be wrong on the direction that shittiness takes.
Yes. And yes, that cover is very accurate to what is happening, believe it or not. Stan's writing this bad boy, of course. We got art by Wallace Wood and Bob Powell's backing him up here, like Bill already mentioned. And then we got Sam Rosenland letters. June 1965 release date. This is a 20-page story. And this is one's for Bill. I forgot. Yeah. I was going to say, I've got to take this, but we're flipping.
They kind of fucked up the credits here. Because it lists art as Wally Wood and Bob Powell, ink by Wally. In comic, it's Bob is the inker and Wally is the artist.
Yeah, which is probably how it
That seems far more likely than that they jointly did the art and then Wally inked the entire thing.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's a mistake. But sometimes with these old comics, the credits are wrong, and so that might actually be right.
It could. I mean, who knows? Who knows at this point?
I didn't notice any massive stylistic shifts in the art, so I'm guessing it was old Wally.
Yeah, fair.
Anyway. Fuck. All right.
That's a good start. That's pretty appropriate.
Yeah, I thought it would be. After busting up some crooks that are trying to make an escape through New York Harbor, Daredevil gets shot in the arm for all his trouble. If you think that's going to be relevant, don't worry, it won't be. Patching up his wound and resuming his civilian guise, Matt Murdock reports for work at his office, where Karen informs him that Dr. Von Eich... Oh, fuck, I just noticed that name. This is off for a great start. Somehow he managed to never say that out loud while I was reading this either time. Dr. Van Eich. And he's an eye doctor.
Yeah.
The doctor who could possibly restore Matt's sight has recently moved to the country of Lichtenbad, which is totally, absolutely not Latveria. Don't even think it is. They meet with Foggy, who is preparing for the arrival of a former exchange student classmate from their post-secondary days named Dr. Doom. Sorry, Klaus Kruger. Who is the Duke of Lichtenbad, who is coming to visit. When Klaus arrives, Matt asks him about Van Eyck's treatment for the blind. Klaus verifies the claims, and Matt asks to go along because he senses that Klaus is lying about something. He doesn't ask to go along. Fucking Karen set this up. I'm feeling like the person writing this summary didn't even read this, which
is
probably smart.
At least you have a summary for this one.
Flying to Lichtenbad, Matt witnesses a botched assassination attempt on the Duke, and all day his radar sense picks up evidence that the Duke runs a dictatorship of oppression over his people. Helping the resistance movement in his Daredevil guise, Daredevil gets into a direct conflict with the Duke and his knights. After freeing the prisoners in the Duke's castle, Daredevil resumes his civilian guise and sees the doctor about his treatment. While back in the States, Karen's obvious affection for Matt visibly angers Foggy, who reacts jealously. Back in Latveria, I mean Lichtenbad, Matt's treatments are interrupted when Dr. Van Eyck's treasonous remarks are heard and the knights take him away. Oh yeah, just in case the Dr. Doom parallels aren't clear enough, the knights are robots. The summary doesn't seem to mention that, but yeah, it's revealed right away the knights are robots.
Yeah.
Changing back into Daredevil, Matt helps the people of Lichtenbad fight off the Duke's men And in a battle with the Duke, end of the sentence, because these things are written greatly. The Duke informs him that he will release a cobalt cloud to kill everyone. That's not what it is. It's a nuke that'll literally destroy the world. This is overheard by Van Eyck, who sacrifices his life to stop this from happening. During the fight with Daredevil, he ends up falling to his death. It's the Duke ends up falling to his death, but we missed a word. Daredevil soon realizes that the Doctor sacrificed himself to save everyone. Back in New York, Karen receives a memo from Matt explaining that the surgery wasn't done, leaving Foggy to jealously assume that Matt chickened out at the last moment. And that is how it ends.
Starting to wonder if the person who wrote that was as high as I was watching Bobby Eaton versus Seaman at that one pay-per-view.
Maybe. I mean, this book is not good, so I could see them just having brain damage from reading it.
Sure, fair enough.
But yeah, this is totally Doctor Doom. It's 100% Doctor Doom. They just didn't want to use Doom for some reason. Probably because they couldn't justify Doom going to law school as well as school with Reed.
Probably, yeah.
But yeah, this is a Doctor Doom story.
The fucked part is, I didn't even put together just how much, like, it really is just a shittier Doctor Doom until you just pointed it all out. Like, I had pieces of it, but I didn't realize how bad.
This is 100% Doctor Doom that they couldn't justify having attended school with both Matt and Foggy and Reed. So they just made a different guy. But like, it's supposed to be Doctor Doom.
Like you said, his fucking servants are even fucking robots.
Yeah, no, this is just a bad Doctor Doom story. That's probably why I didn't hate it nearly as much as it deserved.
I like the Doctor.
Yeah.
He had a nice little arc in this comic.
And I actually enjoyed how shitty it was. Like, it's terrible. But it was the kind of shitty that's actually kind of fun.
Yeah, it was a fun bad, but
I still only gave it 2 stars.
Same.
I'm not trying to claim I gave it a good rating, because I knew it was terrible. I just didn't hate reading it as much as I usually hate a 2-star.
It very much deserves the 2, but it was still kind of fun.
Yeah, I was almost looking forward to turning the page and see what batshit idea they came up with next. Because, like, everything is Doctor Doom, but worse. It's if you bought Doom in Kmart.
Fuck. Oh, my. Well, I think it's time we get to our last comic today, which is Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos, number 20. This one is called The Blitz Squad Strikes. Yep, that's right, they're back. Stan Lee and Dick Ayers is the artist here, with inks by Frank Giacola. Frank and Jack Kirby are doing the cover. We've got letters by Artie Simic. It's a May 1965 release date, a 20-page story. And after the last two, you might think we have good momentum going and everything, and hopefully this will be really great, but... Well, it's fine. It's like fine, Sergeant Fury.
This is mid.
Yeah. But God, let's see what's in store.
God, that Dick and Frank art feels good coming off of Bob and Wally, though.
I mean, they're all pretty good anyways, but especially the difference there would be spectacular. Dick Ayers is really underappreciated.
Underappreciated because his art doesn't age well. Like, it's good for the time, but it's very 60s.
That's fair.
Because he's still doing stuff in the 70s, and every time I hit it, it's like, oh god, Dick Ayers.
Yeah, that kind of happens with the other one we like to, that is doing Iron Man, Don Heck. That happens to him a little bit, too.
They can't really evolve their art and rapidly get left behind.
I saw fucking Don Hex doing stuff for quite, like, some stuff still where I'm ahead in the spreadsheet, and I'm like, holy shit.
Don's still doing stuff where I am. Both of them run into the 80s.
Yeah, I think Don was still Don did Iron Man Forever.
Yeah, and it's good on Iron Man Forever.
Yeah.
Like, as long as Don's on Iron Man, his art's pretty good. But then they start getting moved to, because it's just the Iron Man art, right? Like, you don't notice it until they go away for a while and then come back, and it's like, this art is super dated. But they both come back, and where I am now, they're getting put on consistently, like, lower profile titles, because they still want to give them work, but they don't want them on their mainline titles anymore.
They're just getting phased out, pretty much.
Yeah, you don't put them on the top titles, but you still give them work because they did a lot of good stuff for you.
Yeah, which is good because they to be honest, they do deserve that treatment. Like they
deserve to be working as long as they want.
Yeah, I'm glad that to hear that actually because they're both for their time they were both really good.
Yeah, so. And like I don't hate seeing their art. It's just not nearly as good as some of the other stuff I'm seeing nowadays.
Yeah.
I say nowadays about something that happened 40 years ago. Well, just because it's not 50 years ago.
Yeah. I'm going to get into this good old synopsis here, and by synopsis I mean I'm going to look through the comic and bullshit my way through this. So, the Blitz Squad strikes. The issue starts off, we see the Blitz Squad, and they are attacking a German transport with that's a supply ship. And they kill everybody, but one man gets away.
That's a British. Oh, no, it is. This is... It's marked as German, but it's in Scotland. So it's supposed to be British. They just put the wrong logo on it.
Didn't I say British?
No, you said German.
Oh.
Or I really had a brain fart, but I'm sure you said German.
Okay. I don't know, maybe I did. I thought I said British. In my head, I said British, at least.
Either way, we got it clear now. Whether I misheard or you misspoke doesn't really matter in the long run.
True. So the Blitz Squad shoots everybody, but one guy gets away who is able to contact Division Headquarters and let them know what's going on as the Blitz Squad continues into their... into a castle, I think, and
yeah, they go to a castle,
and they take over.
I love that we're like three pages into the comic and haven't seen Fury yet.
Yeah,
that's a really good start.
We then go back to Great Britain, where Sergeant Fury and Sergeant McGivney are getting to talking over from Happy Sam Sawyer, and McGivney's being a little cunt like normal, and. I forgot that word's not YouTube friendly. Ignore that I said that. A little bastard like
I
normal.
Love McGivney. McGivney. He is very hilarious. Cunty, but he's also awesome. If you're going down for it, I'm going with you.
Fair enough. It's not like our channel's high profile enough anyway to get noticed. For
we need to have monetization before it can get taken away from us.
Exactly. McGivney tries to get Fury going, but Fury's just like, I don't really care, and Fury's still grieving over Pamela a little bit, and McGivney, they're all McGivney's guys are like, McGivney, go after him, like, he's even got your back turned off, and he's like, no, I'm not falling for this, blah, blah, blah. He's like, all the one that end up, fucking in trouble.
Yeah, he just knows Fury's going to kick the shit out of him, and then he'll get in trouble.
Anyway, skipping ahead, I wanted to go into the McGivney stuff because I thought it was pretty fun. But
this is the best part of the comic.
Fair.
I love the McGivney stuff. And the intro with the Blitzkrieg Squad where you don't see Fury for a couple pages, and then the McGivney stuff is great. It's only once they go on the mission that this comic starts heading downhill a bit.
Speaking of the mission, they are quickly from here sent into it as they are challenged with taking down the Blitz Squad in their castle folly here. They pretty fast actually break in here, but for a while they're kind of struggling with, no they're not really, are they?
They don't struggle. That's my issue with this comic. They do not struggle.
They don't struggle, like, at all, burying these guys. The Blitz Squad, that is, of course.
Yeah, that's my issue with this comic. The Blitz Squad are supposed to be as good as them, and they don't even struggle. They just... 15 pages of them kicking the shit out of the Blitz Squad.
Who are led by Baron Strucker, don't forget. I'm really just trying to find anything of substance here, and there's not anything going
absolutely
on besides them
getting
their asses
important
kicked.
Happens in the rest of this comic. They just beat them up for 15 pages, and then they rescue all the... They recapture all the aviators that were held captive in the castle, go home, and everyone's happy.
Somehow on page 13, Strucker still thinks he's going to win this. Yeah, they're just getting their ass kicked. It's the end of the day lesson here. Even fucking Baron Strucker ends up getting chumped out by Fury at the end of the day.
Yeah, I know he becomes good, but he's not good yet.
He's been decent in this title so far. This is probably his worst appearance so far. He takes a few whacks from Fury and he's done. So yeah, they're pretty well taken care of pretty easily. There's nothing to fucking talk about here, folks.
Yeah, no. That's why I had opinions on this comic, because it starts so good. And then it's just terrible. This is literally split between the first 6 or 7 pages are 4 stars, because even their getting into the castle is good, because a bunch of planes fly over and drop smoke bombs, so the Germans all figure that they're going to parachute in, so they all run up onto the battlements and start shooting into the sky to hit the paratroopers, while Fury and the rest of the Howlers sneak in through a tunnel underground.
I mean, they get back to the base at the end of the issue. The Blitz Squad is our prisoners of war for now. And that's about it. Damn.
Oh, yeah, they did capture the Blitz Squad. That might be important. I haven't read any more Fury, so I don't know if that's going anywhere or if they just forget about it next time they use them, but it could be important in the future.
This is their acknowledgement of it. Like, it's just one little panel where there it is.
Yeah, no, I definitely remember it happening now that you mention it. It's just, that might actually be important, so I shouldn't gloss over that. They do show up again in, like, 2 issues.
Yeah, I figured they must show up again relatively soon because of that, but I haven't even read it yet. I've only read one more issue after this, so.
So, yeah, this was fine. I gave it 3 stars.
Yeah, it's a solid 3, like...
They did some
great.
Really good stuff, and then the fight with the Blitz Squad went on way too long for how easy it was.
It was an easy read, but it was an easy task for the Howlers, too. So.
I actually found it a hard read. I really struggled, because there were so many pages of them just beating the fuck out of the Blitz Squad. I was getting bored, and then I'd get lost, because there's a lot of words for how one-sided it is. And I'd get lost because I didn't really care, and I was kind of fighting the urge to skim it.
Fair. I can get that, too. I guess for me, it was just like, well, it just seemed like an easy read for me, I guess, because while there is some wordy parts, it's also a lot of action. It's kind of just like, I just kind of had the momentum going and didn't think about it much, I guess.
Yeah, I think I would have found it an easy read if I didn't have this podcast. And I felt like I actually had to read everything for this podcast, because otherwise I probably would have just skimmed and been like, yeah, they're still beating up the Howlers. Or the Blitz Squad.
I mean, I didn't... Yeah, I mean... Don't get me wrong, I didn't skim or anything either, but I just, like, fucking... I don't know. I don't know how to explain it even, but...
It was also fighting the urge that when I read this, I really didn't want to be reading comics, and I was just doing it so that I had it read.
That might be part of the
issue. It was like the morning we were supposed to record. And I'm like, I better get those last 3 comics out. And so I quickly read them all at work, and I didn't want to be reading comics. But I had to do it because I thought we were going to be recording that night.
And like you said, this is a kind of mid Surge and Fury.
Yeah. I mean, Fury as a whole is mid.
Yeah, but Fury was on a better run here, hypothetically at least. You didn't enjoy the last one as much as I did, still.
No, I think a lot of it's that Fury's just on a topic that I'm not that interested in. Like, I don't like War Comics that much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a spot for them in my heart either, I guess. The beauty of this one,
they're never bad.
Yeah.
They're just never good either.
But the beauty of Sergeant Fury and why I like it is that, yes, it's a war comic, but it's also, it leans into its superhero tropes a lot, too, and how it tells its story.
Oh, yeah, that's why it's in the 616 order. Because this is a superhero comic. It should be main order, but...
It should be, yes. Considering how Fury is brought into the...
Yeah, I think we're literally doing, if not the first, more Fury next time. We did one already, didn't we?
Yeah, we did the first one.
Okay, I don't remember for sure if this is the first one or not that we have next week.
Yeah, so speaking of next week, let's talk about what we're covering next week. Which is, we are getting one next week, look at that. Next week, we start with Avengers number 18, which is a terrible way to start the week, to be honest with you guys.
I'm so sorry.
Please stick with us. Oh, God. Then after that is Amazing Spider-Man 28, a pretty mediocre Spider-Man.
It's not bad.
It's not bad, but it's not good for Spider-Man. It's good, but not good for Spider-Man.
I'll concede that. I still think it's a pretty good comic.
See, Bill knows what I mean by that. You guys might be confused. But I mean that it's a good comic. Like,
we're
it gets
spoiled
a good
because
rating.
The rest of Spider-Man is so good that a just good comic is still bad for it.
Yes. After those two, we get another Surge and Fury, which is the last one I've got to read so far, which is issue 21. Then we get Fury back to back as Strange Tales 136A story, the next part of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. story, and title going on is here. And
wait a
then
minute, there's
we get
a Fury in that gap. Oh yeah, there it is. I missed that. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Then we're gonna end off with a couple annuals, which will be the Amazing Spider-Man Annual Number 2 and Fantastic Four Annual Number 3. Yes,
the Fantastic Four annual is pretty good. I mean, it's utterly inconsequential, but it's fun. But that Spider-Man annual is real bad. For Spider-Man,
I wasn't expecting it to be either. Going in.
Yeah, I mean, once again, when we say it's bad, we mean it's bad for Spider-Man.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Avengers, somehow Spider-Man would be the weakest spin next week.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
I would. Although I kind of forget the Howlers issue, so I might be speaking a bit out of...
I think the Spider-Mans would still rate higher than the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for me.
Really?
That's a good Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's a 3-star good Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I guess you enjoyed the annual more than I did, so...
I mean, it had Spider-Man and Doctor Strange in it. I'll have to read it again. I don't remember it at all. And they're all rated 3, so it's hard for me to tell. But,
okay, see, they're not all rated 3 for me, so that's the difference.
Okay, fair enough. Then I definitely liked that annual more than you.
Yes. But yeah, that's next week. And a very interesting lineup is the word I'm going to use today. So make sure you come back and see what's going on.
It's one of our stranger weeks, I think. And that's
so
not
far,
a pun on Doctor Strange showing up in Spider-Man.
No, it's...
I only realized that it could be interpreted that way after I said it.
I guess a little tease, a little fart in the future. After that, if you're an X-Men fan, we finally got some X-Men back in action, so stay tuned
And it's good stuff. It's not bad X-Men.
Yes. At least mostly. But anyways...
I only saw the first one with the Sentinels on the cover. I don't know if there's any more in that week.
It's 5 in a row. But anyways...
Okay. Oh, I remember what comes after the Sentinels. Okay, yeah. Not the best afterwards.
Enough teasing, though. If you're watching
this... Not the worst, either. It's not the locust.
Fair enough. If you're watching this on YouTube, please would like, subscribe, comment, even share if you would like to. Hopefully next week we'll get Dan back.
Please write in and tell us why Kmart Doctor Doom is the best thing ever. Fuck you, yeah. I'm taking the worst villain this week.
You didn't even let me get there yet, brother.
I know, because I knew you were going to say it first otherwise, and I wanted to call him Kmart Doctor Doom.
Well, we're also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and of course Spotify, and if you're listening on Spotify, Bill already took the best one, so I guess let us know why Stiltman's your boy, with that,
Stiltman's that at least boy worthy. Kmart Doctor Doom is not worthy of that.
No. The Doctor is more worthy of that.
The Doctor is a true hero.
Yes, exactly. That's my
point. I will never forgive him for his name. Fuck you, Stan.
I can't believe you just realized that in this episode.
I didn't click until I said it out loud.
I was cringing like the whole lead up into it and everything at this stupid name, but yeah. Anyways, we shall end this episode. See y'all next time. No wrestling stream this weekend, but we'll get one next weekend. And we'll see you all.
I think it will later. Be a stream. We're due to do some WCW.
Yes, it will be a stream. I just forgot. I just wanted to cover my bases. Anyway, guys, peace out.
Have a good one, everyone.